So again, good morning and welcome. I've been thinking a little bit this morning about how the words we use to talk about the Dharma, of course, are always going to be inadequate. The true Dharma can only be experienced through the gateless gate of your own mind. So why is it a gateless gate? We often talk about our clinging nature and attachment. But today I'd like to talk about it as identification. So it's not like we're trying to stop thinking and everything will be clear like space and you will see your original nature and be awakened and da 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 da. It's the identification with the thinking. It's not the thinking itself. Desires, it's not desires. Identification. Because of the skandhas, because the mental formations through, the six senses and sense objects and the consciousness of all that. We have this strong identification. And for most, the idea that there is nothing to grasp onto, as much as we try to, is a very scary proposition because of identification. What they don't understand is when you're not identified, it's all there. Your original nature is like space. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken away. It doesn't begin. It doesn't end. It doesn't have a past, a present, a future. Yet, all of that is present in space. Space contains it all, but is unaffected by any of it. Why is that important? So the gateless gate, the gate part is identification. The gateless part is your clear mind like space, your original nature. That's the gateless gate that you have to go through to awaken or enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. Buddha's original teaching was that. However, he realized that it would just either frighten people, scare them away, or they'd misunderstand, they not wouldn't be able to take that journey to become awakened. We keep missing the boat. And we end up drowning in samsara. We're like the dog chasing the rocks instead of recognizing who's throwing the rocks at them. Pointing at the moon and seeing the finger. All of those analogies and metaphors, and they're all just pointing at something that can't be pointed at actually. So you only can experience true mind through the gateless gate of your own mind. No other way. There is no path, actually. There's no Dharma, actually. There's just this. That's just this. There is a treasure. You just have to pass through the gateless gate of your own mind to find it. Sometimes there's stages. because it's just easier for us to work through it that way. Sometimes our sitting practice seems like it goes through different levels of understanding or getting somewhere, when it's really just undoing the identification as so-called levels. So according to our capacity for understanding, that's how much undoing we're doing. So if we have a capacity of a racehorse, we're going to get there a whole lot faster than a donkey. So it's up to our capacity to understand the reality of the gateless gate of our own minds. I love this audience today because you're like the racehorses. You may not think so, but you are. I know you are. There's no donkeys here today.
Just thinking about what I've come across so much in my reading about the stages of the path. And so what you're saying is that stages of the path are kind of a guideline for our intellectual mind, but in essence, there are no stages?
Correct. It's just because the path looks kind of scary and there's a big cliff on each side and you're kind of afraid falling off into the void and losing yourself. So you have to have these stages where you get the strength to take the next step. But ultimately, you have to drop all that, because those stages go on for eons of samsara, because you just keep on the same cycle. Because the identification with the conceptual thought, as long as you're conceiving and adding and another layer, and deceiving yourself into thinking you know. So there's all of that. So you can appreciate your intellect. You can appreciate your creativity from the point of view of not identifying with it as you, as who you are. Rather, have a mind that's clear like space, and then everything is reflected clearly, and you see it for what it is. Then intuition and wisdom is working. As long as you're using your intellect to understand something, wisdom isn't working. It's just based on your knowledge, studying knowledge. It's not based on true understanding, true wisdom that comes from the gateless gate of your own mind, not from anywhere else. You know, I'm not saying don't go down life in stages. It doesn't matter, ultimately. You have this pure, perfect, original nature already. So in other words, you already are Buddha. There's no place to go to get it, but you don't know that. So go ahead and go get it. However long it takes, doesn't matter, actually, because you already have it, you see. To have a strong faith in your original nature is really important, because from there, the jumping off the cliff thing doesn't scare you so much, because you already recognize on some level that it's all here. There's nothing you are lacking. It's just how we think about things.
The idea of stages is a very linear concept.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that, yeah, just it's apparent that to some degree, as humans, we kind of compartmentalize these things in culturally, religiously. There's a lot of fertile soil there for sure. But you know, the idea of the gateless gate is, for me, it's like, well, we had to invent a gate first before we used the metaphor. So, like in the past, I've been very identified with, say, practice and, you know, sadhana as laid out as, because there's a certain faith in that. Like, well, if I check the boxes 1, 2, 3, then that means I'm on my way somewhere. It's a funny thing because I think we are in a position where we do still need this kind of organization, things that we can do to enhance, improve, and
Yeah, absolutely.
essentially in the end, boom.
While you're going through all that and its stages and all the rest of it, it's just helping you to, if it's correct action for you, it's helping you to let go and get to the so-called next stage. But so it doesn't really matter whether you say there are no stages or there are. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether you're Soto Zen or Rinzai Zen, in other words. Both of them's objective is the same place. So it's just, you know, the divisions and the things that we divide ourselves up into is not real. So the thing that, of course, this is Zen, and Zen is about cutting through things and getting to the point. And it's not about layers and stages, which is difficult for a lot of people. And that's why not everybody's attracted to it. But it's no different than the other ways in the Mahayana traditions, actually. They all are expedient means to get to awakening to your original nature. That's it. So whatever works for you, great. Yes.
Does that mean that in the Zen tradition, the stages of the path are not defined as they are in other traditions?
Correct. No stages.
Okay, so that's in Zen tradition, the stages, just as awesome.
Well, no, I'm not saying there aren't different practices. But you know, you're not like, okay, today I'm going to initiate you into this practice because you're ready for it. And then I'm going to initiate you into this practice because now you're ready for that. And I'm the one that determines that and blah, 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 blah. No. You need to get to know yourself, period. Nobody else is going to do it for you, or nobody can show you the way. So, you know, it's just, that's what I mean about cut to the chase. It's like, here I am. This is my suffering. This is my body. This is my experience. And if I don't get over myself, nobody's going to get it for me. And even those teachings that teach me to get over myself, you know, it's just expedient means. So if you identify too strongly with any of that, then you're creating an obstacle for yourself. I never paid much attention to hierarchies, like who's at the top and who's at the bottom, and you know, what stage you're in, and this person over here is more enlightened than this person, and all that crap. The Zen teacher that is a really good teacher is someone who's just pointing you to yourself. They're not giving you anything, they're not telling you anything, they're not adding anything to who you are. Not a thing. If they're really being good, they're just pointing you to yourself and saying, you know, there you are. Well, why? What's missing? What's missing? I've had a hard time, for example, going through the lineages. So lineages, you know, how they deviate depending on who the teachers are and where and all that. For me, all of that if you're too caught up in that, it's a stumbling block. It's not going to get you anywhere. May make your ego feel better because you belong to the correct lineage. And this one's obviously not the correct lineage because there are a bunch of doofuses over there. We know what we're doing over here. How is that any different than the ordinary deluded views that everyday people carry around with them? You know, this car makes me look better. This job, you know, at the cocktail party, I can talk about how my accomplishments are better than, you know, I mean, come on. This is all kidding ourselves in order to build up a false sense of self that isn't real. So as long as there's a buildup of a false self, the teaching isn't working. If it's getting you to let go of the false self, whatever it is, whatever you call it, wonderful. But you know, you the only way you're going to know that is if you really dive into your own experience, not what somebody's telling you to believe or to think. It's really important to remember not to be identified with these. They're just expedient means. And if they're working for you and getting you to undo some of these mental attachments that you have, wonderful. But, you know, recognize it for what it is. Likewise, you know, when we're sitting, sometimes you'll have some really wonderful states, these states of samadhi that are just really, and you can identify with them. And that's what's called Zen sickness, right? Because you think that that's it. Now you've got it. Now, but as soon as you identify with anything, you've already lost it. You know, you can't comprehend it with the mind. You can't comprehend it with your intellectual thinking. You can only experience it through the gateless gate of your own mind. Only thing I could say is, for me, it's experience. Experiencing your original nature, that's all that matters. Then everything else takes care of itself. It's all takes care of itself because it is all right there.
I think this is one of the most dissatisfying things about Zen, because I think that the perception of that is that it's, oh, so in the end it's just dull and dead, and there isn't anything, you know, I don't get the goodie kind of thing.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I mean, there's plenty of examples like we're talking about of stages and accomplishments and,
Yeah.
you know, some metaphorical trophies of some sort, initiations of a certain level,
Yeah.
and on and on and on. And really, I mean, in the end, it's, you know, it's just this, you know, like there isn't really and that's the jewel, right? That's the
Yeah.
jewel is it's just you can't be separated from it. You can't, you know, there the jewel is understanding that you're just creating a bunch of messes. You could just stop and you're good. You know,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
but I think that we you know, because we have nerve endings and
Yeah.
thoughts and desires and aspirations, whether they're material or altruistic, there's still like these aspirations that want to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
And the efforts for that and the accomplishments, you know, it all is kind of like something we feel like we're acquiring on our way.
The five stages of grief, which apparently don't really exist. It's just something that I wrote it down. They wrote, yeah, that makes sense.
It's a way for us to put things in categories and make sense of
But
them.
those, the five, you know, any of those is like the caveat is always that these can co-occur at any time. Well, yeah, okay, so there's not five, there's,
Your mileage
you
may
know,
vary.
it's all just a bunch of soup.
Or the six perfections. What is it? The 32 signs of the Buddha. I mean, you know, Buddhism has got lots of those. In other words, so much of our conditioning is built on lack, and there's not enough to go around, and the differences that we experience. And, you know, and we can recognize that this is what's causing the suffering between us all, because you're there, I'm here, and we're separate. And, you know, this essential, very basic teaching of Buddha that we're mind, this mind, what's called mind-to-mind transmission, which just means we're all connected to such a degree that we don't recognize even how connected we are, you know. And so when you recognize that, how can you not treat everyone, you know, well? You know, it's like, so like the six perfections, we call them stages, and they're the way of the bodhisattva path. But the bodhisattvas don't think about six perfections. They don't like study them and become perfect at the six perfections. They are a natural state of what's already there. They're already present. And it's just allowing because of the non-identification with samsara, with the suffering, you know, the causes of suffering, and just letting go. And then, you know, then you see the treasure for what it is. As soon as you identify, you create duality.
How would you relate what you're saying to the concept of working with one's own neurosis?
Mm.
There was a program that I did at Rocky Mountain Dharma Summit many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Maitri program.
Mm-hmm.
Maitri is loving kindness. Mm-hmm. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And we studied about the different Buddha families.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have their own unique manifestation of energy, of neurosis, of everything. And my background is in psychology. So I think it seems that learning to get to know one's own mind, which is basically what you're saying, of course encompasses, of course, getting to know one's own neurosis.
Yes.
I'm not really sure what the point is that I'm trying to make, but that...
You're talking, I think what you're talking about is something that I've become very interested in lately because of the position I'm in and being really careful about my audience. And because a stable mind is pretty necessary for this teaching to really take off. So first you have to get a stable mind. So in order, but there's plenty of things about our practice that can help people get to a stable place with their minds. In fact, that's where we begin. In our sitting practice, for example, we say it's about getting to know ourselves. And the first obstacle to getting to know ourselves is ourselves. So in other words, our identification with how we view the world. And then when we start to disassemble our ideas and recognize that these are just ideas, you know, and our history. I mean, when you're sitting, often your attitudes about life will just come to the surface because you're letting go enough to allow these deeper sort of emotional and psychological states to sort of pop up, right? In our practice, we don't do anything about those. We just acknowledge them. I mean, really acknowledge them, not push them away. So, which is our normal practice in our ordinary life, and that's why we can't understand, why is my life like this? Because you're pushing away aspects of how you've gotten to where you are today in order to, right? I mean, from a psychological point of view, you're sort of pushing things away that you don't want to deal with. So you're creating a misperception of what your responsibility is in your own life, in a way. You're saying, you know, I can blame it on my parents. I can blame it on this, you know, terrible tragedy. I can blame it on this or that for my suffering, and not really say, oh, okay, The only common denominator in all of that is me. The reason I say it's important to have faith in original nature, that there is something here, even though you may not see it or understand it, that we're all part of, and it connects all of us. You have to have faith in that to begin with. You know, because it's not a big, deep, dark hole that you fall into. It's a safe space that you are in. It is where compassion resides. It is that. But you may not see that. You may not recognize it. So start out with just having faith that you're part of that. And let go of the part that you're not. I'm not a therapist, you know. I can't help someone through their neuroses, really. But we can sit together here in addition to your going to see your therapist. And, you know, hopefully between all of the different processes of getting better, we're able to do that. But sitting for me has saved my life. Sitting for me was essential in healing and becoming whole and being a whole person. For me, that's why I do this, because it did save my life. And I suspect that I'm not alone. That's why. Other than be a compassionate, loving, honest person, and the rest has to take care of itself. I don't have any control over what somebody does with their lives. Well, thanks for joining us again today. Nice talk. Thank you.